Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and we begin this Monday morning, as Brian often does, with a Monday morning political roundup. And for that, I'm joined by Melinda Henneberger. She is the editor-in-chief of PoliticsDaily.com. Melinda, welcome.
Hi, how are you, Jamie?
So let's start with a look back and a look ahead. I read that Barack Obama is retooling his 2008 machine for what he expects will be a tough reelection race. In fact, this was a front-page story in yesterday's New York Times. Melinda, what's the 2012 machine going to look like?
Well, I think that you would need some retooling no matter what, given the jobless rate being back over 9%. So I think what they're saying is, you know, yes, we had some good news. We took out bin Laden. We had some good weeks, but, you know, we have a long, long way to go. And so they're busy recruiting people for the 12th team and kind of trying to get back some of that positive energy that we haven't seen too much of, really.
Yeah, and I guess that raises a question, and it's always a question in the second term, but arguably more pressing this time around. How much of a distraction is this reelection campaign going to be for the president as he works to tackle joblessness and the economy, the housing crisis, not to mention war overseas?
I'm not sure I would say it's a distraction, given that the politics and his job are the same thing. I mean, his job is bringing down that jobless rate, is addressing the economy, and if he does that, that will help him politically, obviously. So, you know, you probably saw him in Toledo on Friday at a Chrysler plant talking about, you know, thanks, Toledo, for paying back the money for the bailout 6 years earlier. He'll be doing that, you know, throughout the summer, trying to remind people about some of the economic decisions he's made that have worked.
Yeah, and of course, the GOP will try and paint it as a distraction, but as you say, it is just the job definition to essentially campaign as one is president of the United States. On the other side of the aisle, Melinda, the Republican nomination contest is intensifying. We had the announcement last week from Mitt Romney that he is running again. He's got to be the front runner, right? I mean, how does anybody beat that war chest?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think there someone else who will have the money, if were he to catch on, would be John Huntsman. I mean, I don't think...
And tell our listeners about John Huntsman, because he's, of course, far less well-known than Mitt Romney.
That's right. John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah, who was, until a few weeks ago, Obama's ambassador to China. Very, very popular governor in Utah. He left office with something like an 80% approval rate in a very conservative state, seen by some in his party as too moderate for views like approving same-sex civil unions, views on the environment that he's kind of walking back now on cap and trade. A new face and someone who, again, would have the war chest Romney has. I think Romney is mainly seen as the front runner right now because he has this amazing name. I mean, he has 100% name ID in New Hampshire, which, of course, is an important early primary state.
Now, I have to, of course, because although Mitt Romney, one assumes, is the front runner, Sarah Palin continues to be a favorite among Tea Party conservatives and arguably even in the media. And that
right.
means I have
to agree with that.
Right. She's everywhere.
Sarah Page Views Palin will always be a favorite of the media.
Well, I have to ask you about the little history lesson she gave all of us this weekend. Here
right.
she is during a stop at the Old North Church in Boston.
He who warned the British that they weren't going to be taking away our arms by ringing those bells and making sure as he's riding his horse through town to send those warning shots and bells that we were going to be secure and we were going to be free.
Now, of course, you know, Melinda, that she's talking about Paul Revere. I know it, too, because we're politics junkies. But I think anybody who hadn't heard the quote before now would kind of wonder who she was talking about, because there were no bells and shots. There were lanterns. And Paul Revere wasn't warning the British. He was warning the Patriots about the British. So she's a little unclear on the midnight ride of Paul Revere.
Well,
but does it matter? I mean, I don't know that her supporters really care about that. In fact, it's part of her anti-elitism, anti-establishment platform, right?
That's absolutely right. I think the more we say, ha ha, she didn't know about Paul Revere's ride, the better that is for Sarah Palin, because she, I think, gets great mileage out of perceiving herself and her followers believing that she is treated very poorly by the so-called lamestream media. And in a way, she's doing exactly what she promised, because she promised that this trip around America would be to bring to get us talking and remembering and being grateful for American history. And I can't remember when Paul Revere got more ink than he has since Sarah Palin started talking about him. She also
she
came back and defended her original remarks and said she really was right, and there was a lesser known incident in which Paul Revere was captured, and this part is true, and under pressure did warn the British that they would not have an easy time because the Americans were waiting for them. But of course, the other thing is that you know, talking about British, who's not British, who are we warning? I mean, everybody involved in this scenario, including Paul Revere, was, of course, British. So
that's right. And if you put it in context, and to be fair to Sarah Palin, she did then on Fox News attempt with Chris Wallace, giving her the opportunity to put it in context over the weekend. So, you know, given her base, it's probably not that big a deal.
Oh, no, not at all. And, you know, kids are listening to their parents talking about Paul Revere.
So there
okay.
you go. And we'll all now remember the old poem and recite it again and again. And we'd forgotten since third grade about the midnight ride of Paul Revere. All right, let's talk about a different kind of credibility problem, the problem of our local New York congressman here, Anthony Weiner.
Oh my.
It's a huge story here in New York. First of all, he's got that unfortunate last name. The tabloids,
right.
We've got tabloids in New York that you don't have in every city, but we certainly have them here, and they love it. The Twitterati aren't letting it die either. But help our listeners put it in perspective. How much of a story is this nationally, in Washington, on Capitol Hill? And will there be any long-term effect, do you think, on the career of Congressman Weiner?
I would think so. I mean, I may have the minority view in Washington, because I know that a lot of my colleagues have said they really don't think it's a very big story. I happen to. If, you know, the potential next mayor of New York City is, you know, tweeting lewd photos of himself, to me that's a story. I mean, if I'm living in New York, that's something I'd rather know sooner rather than later. And nationally, I mean, I think if a member of Congress is doing this, that's news. I mean, I think
and to be fair to Congressman Weiner,
right.
He says, of course, that he did not send the tweet, but that is
the question,
the developing story.
The question, I think, at this point isn't so much whether he sent it. It seems he did not send it, but he has acted just squirrely about the whole thing and won't say it wasn't him, and he couldn't say with certainty whether that's him or not. So he's just sort of made this worse day by day by behaving bizarrely about the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a story. Another reason it's a story is that it's very unlike a lot of others. It's simple to understand.
There have been so many of these stories in the last
right.
few weeks. We had Schwarzenegger in California, sort of coast
right.
to coast.
Right.
There's a story along
John
these
Edwards,
lines, which takes
yeah.
me to John Edwards. See, you
right.
knew where I was going. Indicted last week on charges related to his affair and the child he had with Riley Hunter. I write about this on our political website. It's a free country today. But I made a legal analysis. What's your political analysis of the case and the story as it goes forward?
Well, I guess legally what they're looking at is, does this is this a new interpretation of campaign finance laws, and that the idea is that it's pretty murky, that there have been decisions on both sides as to whether a personal gift from a campaign contributor is kosher or not. I don't know the legality of it. I'm disappointed personally that he wouldn't find a way to avoid a trial for his kids' sake, kids who obviously have been through so much.
And they did try to negotiate, apparently, a plea deal last week, and they just couldn't get there. Jail time was on the table. He didn't want to do it. And so here we go to trial.
Right. I mean, you know, the visuals were, of course, extremely unfortunate. Just when you think this thing couldn't get any lower and there couldn't be more to hear about this, here we go again. And, you know, poor Kate Edwards, his grown daughter, is, you know, running to catch up with them and can't keep up. And he doesn't even, you know, notice she's there. And, you know, so she's sort of
and she seems to be a lovely, lovely young woman.
A lovely person. Yeah. I mean, who couldn't feel for her no matter what you think of her father?
Well, I do agree with you. I think the saga will continue. Doesn't look like that will be going away anytime soon. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. My guest is Melinda Henneberger. And I want to now go overseas, Melinda, with your permission. There's news today, unfortunately, sadly, that five American service members, five more, were killed in Iraq. Let's take a listen to New York Times reporter Jack Healy live from Baghdad this morning on The Takeaway.
We're hearing from Iraqi officials, you know, with the security forces, that the attacks occurred on a base, a U.S. military base in southeastern Baghdad, and that they were the result of sort of multiple rocket strikes earlier this morning.
So, Melinda, what is next in Iraq, and what are the political implications for Barack Obama if he's still fighting George Bush's war going into 2012?
Oh, boy. I mean, it's in Iraq, but, you know, the war has been over twice now, and it isn't over, has been declared over, I should say. In Afghanistan, I mean, Gates just said again yesterday, you know, and we just need six more months and we'll turn this baby around. You know, he said the U.S. has momentum now and that, you know, we have just turned the corner. But we've really been hearing that for the last 10 years. And I think that politically there's not the will to continue. It's sort of an interesting turnaround when you have the Obama administration, you know, who really has, it's true, to a large degree, followed up on George W. Bush's policies, and some of the Republicans running for, who were going to be running, saying, you know, we've got fatigue here, guys. It's been a decade. A lot of them are not so sure we ought to be continuing this way.
And you raise the specter of Afghanistan, and there seems to be a little bit of disagreement within the administration, because today there are reports that some in the administration want to reduce troops there even more quickly than discussed a few weeks ago. Robert Gates, though, speaking yesterday, says the decision should be made there on the ground later this summer. Take a listen to this.
To make a decision on July in complete isolation from anything else has no strategic meaning.
So Secretary Gates, Melinda, saying that the drawdown decisions in Afghanistan should be based on what's happening on the ground later this summer. But Melinda Henneberger, The Times, The New York Times reporting today that advocates of a steeper pullout are citing the death of Osama bin Laden and the war's rising costs as reason to support a shift in strategy to a much more rapid pullout now. Now, that makes a whole lot of sense, and that has to appeal to President Obama politically.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's the national security team that is pressing for this, but, I mean, it definitely has to be in concert with this political team saying that a sharper drawdown of troops would definitely be in his political interest. I don't think there's any question about that. But then, as you say, I think it's not just that Gates wants to see what is happening on the ground in July, but he clearly thinks that we need to stay committed there.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. And Melinda, I do have to make an apology. Politics Daily, which was your online publication, I was a tremendous fan. You were editor-in-chief.
Oh, thank you so
and
much.
It's funny that I made the error because I remember reading your eloquent sign-off.
Thank you so much.
So I want to make the correction. You're now with Time.
That's right.
.com. And we're so pleased to have you here talking national and world politics for our Monday roundup. And Melinda, we have to talk about Yemen, because, of course, events there captivated the Middle East and the world over the weekend with Yemen's embattled president, Ali Abdel Saleh, suddenly departing for Saudi Arabia. He was reportedly wounded during fighting there. He had been clinging to power. Now, take a listen to this gentleman on the ground. He is the editor-in-chief of the Yemen Post.
Yesterday they were celebrating, and today they are preparing, in case Saleh comes, how should we react and what do we do to ensure that he is powerless when he comes back from Yemen, if he does come back.
So that is Hakim Amousmari. He is the editor-in-chief of the Yemen Post. And he's saying there, Melinda, that the opposition in Yemen will fight to keep Saleh from coming back. And he spoke with The Takeaway earlier today here at WNYC. So, Melinda Henenberger, how concerned is the U.S. about chaos in Yemen? And why? In other words, the vacuum that is there. And we're going to have a whole segment on Yemen in our next hour. But taking it from, as a political analyst, from the White House point of view, as they keep an eye on Yemen, what are the concerns for President Obama and his administration?
Well, in keeping with what we said earlier, I mean, the last thing that would be good for him politically would be, you know, yet another involvement. And yet, things are so unclear, not clarifying at all. I think that, you know, our ally Saudi Arabia probably won't let Saleh back into Yemen if they can help it, and I think they can. But, you know, the question is now that because al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is, you know, our big concern in Yemen, and a lot of the opposition doesn't think that that's a real concern. In fact, some even question if they exist in any important numbers. You know, so does that mean with the new situation that the U.S. will have to act more unilaterally against terrorists? Will we have to send more armed drones? There doesn't seem to be any good answer for the U.S. at this point.
And as I say, we will have a full segment on Yemen at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. Lastly, Melinda, I want to ask you about Israeli forces firing at pro-Palestinian protesters on the Syrian border on Sunday. And, you know, we had the Arab Spring, but does this reflect a new mode of popular struggle in the Arab role or, you know, a vacuum of stalled peace talks or both? What are we looking at across the Middle East as we move into the long, hot summer?
That's right. The Arab Spring, I mean, there is so much happening all across the Middle East. I mean, this thing on the Syrian border is really so serious. And a lot of the hopes, I mean, remain high, but, I mean, so do the casualties. So it's certainly going into, as you say, long, hot summer. It's very unclear where we're going from here.
Well, I have been so pleased to speak with you. I could have done a full hour of talking with you about world events, so many things we didn't get to. But Melinda Henenberger, Time.com, such a pleasure to speak with you.
Thanks, Jamie, for having me.
And we will have to leave it there, around the world and back in one radio segment with Melinda Henenberger. And I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up next, how the city chose which firehouses to close and the budget pressures and battles over the FDNY.